Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to
2009
with Squidge. Let's look at the
Lions Tour
again with Squidge.
Hello again, welcome back, and welcome in particular to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, the rugby podcast that still exists, and none of the others do. Do you hear about that?
Yeah, I heard about that. Was that our fault?
No, it's some other guy's fault. So we have not been around for a bit.
No, we stopped existing.
Yeah.
Like, we actually died for a bit.
We didn't. I don't want that story to get out. It was entirely fine. Everything was fine.
Wait, was it fake
nothing,
news?
Nothing suspicious happened. So you may remember a few weeks ago, we started a Lions Tour retrospective. I called it the World Cup retrospective, didn't I?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know the name of my own podcast anymore.
We started a Lions Tour retrospective podcast going over every game for the 2009 Lions series. We had two means of watching the game for the 2009 Lions series, and then we lost all of them but the tests, and we couldn't agree on whether or not to just skip ahead to the tests.
Like, conveniently on the day we were about to record the third episode as well, like the game, we were going to watch it, in fact, the day before we were going to record.
We had a guest lined up and everything.
Yeah.
And didn't wind up happening, and it was a bit rubbish. So what we decided to do is we are going to, from next week, pick up the test, do episodes on each of the tests to run through those. But in the meantime, we are going to, in the next hour or so, run through the highlights of each game from the rest of the tour, which is all we've been able to get access to. There are highlights on YouTube uploaded seemingly by a hedgehog who filmed it on their own back and have uploaded footage to YouTube.
So quick apology for that, because we genuinely really wanted to go for every single game, even though it's late, even though the Lions is over and irrelevant now for the next 4 years. We did really want to do that. And like, I kind of still do. And it's annoying because I think there was probably demand, and the first two episodes of this Lions series have done really, really well. And a lot of you have listened to it, which is really nice. But yeah, so this will have to make do for the time being, I'm afraid, because this is all we had access to.
Yeah, sorry about that. But it does mean that we get to talk about rugby. And I don't know about you, but I love rugby and it's really different.
There's
so many values and there's just so much going on with rugby that is really great. And in particular, I love the thing about rugby, which is that they play matches, right? So for anyone unfamiliar, for anyone that's forgotten in the time since that Lions test, what happens in rugby is there'll be one group of people. They always split it by gender, so it'll always be men or women.
We'll
always come together, and they'll have 15 of them, and they'll have some other guys like milling about, like hoping, you know, just like helping them have a nice time.
What do they do?
Oh, let's not get onto that. We're getting ahead of ourselves, you know. Let me finish. So, and then there'll be another group of the same sort of thing, same sort of 15 men or 15 women.
So the exact same 15 men?
Yes.
There's two copies of this exact same 15 group of men. Yeah.
Did you not watch the Lions? It was exactly team playing each other
I've
twice.
I've actually never seen a full game of rugby.
Okay, right. I'm going to end this podcast because you're clearly the wrong person to do it with.
I have been the whole fucking time. Why do you think we always divert the conversation from rugby? Anyway, what's your favourite Wallace and Gromit film?
I mean, it's The Wrong Trousers.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, that's a short conversation.
Yeah. That's what podcasts are. They're just short conversations. Have you actually stopped recording?
No.
No, cool. What are you doing?
Nothing.
Wow. I can see that much.
I felt like it was a short conversation, so it was over.
Oh, okay. Do you want to carry on explaining the sport of rugby to me?
No, I don't.
Okay, fair enough.
Basically, right, there were some rugby matches in 2009. That's what I was getting at. You know, okay. I was just trying to move us along. So the third game, the Life, Blood and Tour, the first we're going to talk about today, was the Cheaters, right? There were the Cheaters, and they also played, there was the name of the team, not just what they got up to. So, to quickly look at the teams, the Lions put out the all Welsh back three of Lee Burnley, Halfpenny and Shane Williams, and the all... In the centres, have you seen who the Lions had in the centres for this game?
I have literally just seen it.
Luke Fitzgerald at 12 and Keith Earls at 13.
Oh my God.
That is taking the piss. With James Hook at 10 and Harry Ellis at 9. The British and Irish Lions.
In one of my the previous episodes, I remember taking the piss out of the fact that Leinster played Luke Fitzgerald as a 12. I didn't realise the Lions did it. I can only assume that they maybe had somebody pull out before the game and he ended up getting drafted in there.
No, that's... so I remember Luke Fitzgerald saying in the build-up of this tour that he really wanted to play in centre, and that was his goal, was he wanted to play fullback in centre and he didn't like playing on the wing, right. Which is a very typical winger thing to say. You know, Rico Ioane's done it recently. You get it happen. A lot of players who are really good wingers, and they are, their skill set is that of a winger, but because, you know, if you play at a lower level and you are an international class winger, you will be playing in another position most likely because you have the skill set and ability to play any position in the backs to a higher level than, you know, someone who is clearly a 10, but to the standard of Sunday League rugby. Sure. So Fitzgerald played a lot of rugby at fullback and centre in as a ween, and was convinced that he was going to be a fullback or centre in adult rugby and professional rugby. And he was not.
No. He was just a very good winger.
Yeah. Ian McGeachan went, let's give this a go. Let's try this. Let's put Luke Fitzgerald at 12.
On the highlights package we watched, I didn't once see Luke Fitzgerald.
No, I didn't notice him. You notice Keith Earls, because there is a moment where James Hook does a chip over the top, Keith Earls regathers, steps everyone and scores. And you do, I mean, look, like, it's a great try, really nicely taken, but you do find yourself thinking, this is the British and Irish Lions. Sure. And it's James Hook to Keith Earls.
Yeah. Especially given how bad Keith Earls was in that first game. And you know what? Fair play to him catching that chip. And it was a really good finish, actually. He did, as you say, he stepped around the fullback and won the wingers. And, like, he showed a good bit of pace to finish it. And then got an embrace by Lee Halfpenny wearing a red scrum cap, which looked weird.
Yeah. Lee Halfpenny wore a red scrum cap for this tour.
Yeah.
And I never saw him wear one either side. He just wore a red scrum cap just for this tour.
Yeah.
Just fashion choice, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe he had some kind of brand deal with the colour red.
Yes. Yeah, we almost had one of those sorted.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to alienate any.
Maybe it was Simply Red.
It was not the band Simply Red. The band Simply Red do not listen to this podcast. Red Man does.
That's good. Does Method Man listen to this podcast?
No. He's got better things to be doing. He does. He does subscribe to Egg Chasers, like though. No, he definitely doesn't like rugby. He listens to Egg Chasers. So, on the opposition back line, right, we had a man who made a big impression on me on this tour, and I think on a lot of people, Danwell Dimas on the wing.
Yes.
Who was, I remember watching this, he was fantastic in this game. He then got called up late to play in the South Africa A team. They called him up on the back of this game. He was quite an unknown at this point. He wasn't that, you know, well-established, but he played quite well for them that season, having played quite well in the Curry Cup the season before. So kind of, got drafted in. He then, after this, went on to go and play for Aroni. Does anyone, hands up at the back if you remember the team Aroni?
Yeah, and you know what? I think this sets a really, really good example. Because I do think if a fairly lesser-known African winger plays well, they should be picked up by a secondary Italian team.
Yes.
And that's why Danwell Dimas signing for Aroni and being brilliant for them is certainly foreshadowing Chad Plato playing for Zebra.
Absolutely. And look, Danwell Dimas, I think, was the best player in the 2009 Rugby World Cup, right? Name one player who played better in a Rugby World Cup in 2009. Tommy Isaacs. Because it was the seventh World Cup, the Wales won. So I ruined my own point there. In the 15-a-side World Cup, you cannot name a single player who played better than Danwell Dimas.
And also, he was genuinely Aroni's best player for the year.
Yeah.
I can remember once him playing against the Scarlets and him just doing loads of mad shit and like scoring tries completely on his own when he had completely like terrible players next to him. Mm. And I just remember there was one point where the Scarlets kicked in the ball and he stood in his own half and he just for absolutely no reason did a reverse pass across the field under no pressure and he nailed it. It was great. And the commentators lost their mind.
So I've got the photos for him on his profile on ESPN Scrum Up, right? Mm-hmm. There are a handful of photos with captions from his time at Aroni, okay? There are, yeah, five photos of him at Aroni. One of them is him tackling Dave Carney. He says Aroni's Danwar Dimas tackles Leinster's Dave Carney, right?
Fair enough.
The others are Danwar Dimas crosses the line for his solo try. Aroni wing Daniel Domas celebrates his solo try. Aroni wing Daniel Domas dives over for a solo try.
Nice.
So, and then the other one is Aroni wing of Danwar Dimas prepares to pass. Why? Which I think sums up his time at Aroni. Now and again, a team would kick loosely and he would score. And that was all of their points in that game.
And like
he was really good, man.
He had this USP at Aroni of being a good rugby player.
Yeah. But it was
didn't
like...
didn't really sign another one to those.
I think what they did at Aroni, right, was they had a game plan. And they realised that the game plan was basically be a bit shit, because then the opposition get the ball and there's a chance they might kick it loosely to Dimas.
They might sink to your level.
Yeah. And look, it worked.
If this podcast was being recorded 12 years ago, we would definitely have started a petition for Danwar Dimas to sign for Aroni. And you know what? Good on Aroni for actually going ahead and doing it, you know? Roland Phillips was in charge of Aroni?
Roland Phillips was in charge of Zebra. No, of Aroni, sorry. Aroni, yeah. Yes.
So, who knows, if Roland Phillips was in charge of Zebra, he probably would be starting Chad Plater. By the way, I recommend anybody listening to go and look at Chad Plater's Wikipedia page. It's pretty good at the minute. just a little aside there.
So, elsewhere in that Cheetahs team, we had Jacques-Louis Pocrita, not to be confused with Jacques Pocrita, at 10.
Yeah, thank God. Yikes.
Yeah. Oh, there's some horrible stories about Jacques Pocrita for that reason as well. He went on to play for Lyon and Bayonne in France.
Adrian Strauss starts at hooker.
Yes.
His cousin pack. Rickard Strauss, who then went on to play for Ireland, on the bench.
Mm.
WP Nell is also on the bench for the Cheetahs.
Wow, yeah.
Which is...
So they've got
stands out.
Two future Lions qualified players on the bench.
Yeah, sure, who didn't get picked for the Lions, but were both, you know, around when they could have been in contention, you know. And, I mean, probably the most significant thing about their team is Heinrich Brosseau is starting for them.
Yes, Heinrich Brosseau, who wasn't in the Springbok squad initially, so was allowed to be picked, and then they called him up, which was, frankly, a daft thing. Why would you not pick Heinrich Brosseau?
Yeah. He was unbelievably good around this time. And, you know, we'll come on to more of Heinrich Brosseau as these episodes go on. But
also want to throw mention to a guy called Jerry Odendahl on the bench, who this was his only game for the Cheetahs.
Oh, wow. I have not heard of him. But
nope,
that's
why.
Well. Also, a guy
and
called
so fair play to him.
Floors, which is a great name for
that's
a flooring company. You know,
that's excellent. Tell Colin Jarvis.
Yes.
So Kabamba Floors went on to win one cap for. Oh, had already by this point won one cap for South Africa.
Oh, nice.
Against England, Twickenham.
Oh, nice. I do not recognise his name at all.
No. Nope.
So, yeah, but so the game.
Yes.
There was that. Keith Earls' try you mentioned. Stephen Ferris also scored a try, which is pretty much identical to the one he scored in the previous game, but from much shorter range.
So the ball spills out of a ruck just outside the 22, right? Outside the Cheetah Zone 22. They had the ball. The ball spills out of the ruck. Stephen Ferris sees it in front of him, picks it up and runs in a straight line and scores, right? Yeah. He has to cover about 20 metres. Stuart Barnes on commentary then loses his mind, right? This is a quote. That pickup, that change of direction, that sheer pace was devastating. Right? Stephen Ferris picked up a ball in front of him and ran in a straight line with nobody chasing him.
11 minutes into the game when he's probably not done anything yet.
11 minutes into the game, he picked up a
ball. That was the first score of the game.
Jogged in a straight line. He wasn't even going at full pace. It was one of those where you think the referee is going to call it back because no one can quite believe it. But Ferris puts the ball down, but Stuart Barnes loses his mind over how devastating that he was just a change of direction. There was no change of direction.
He literally he just goes in a straight line.
Yeah. He doesn't even take it under the post. He just goes in a straight line from where he picked it up.
He picked the ball up, got out his sat-nav, and figured out which direction would be the quickest to get the posts to run in without needing to change direction at all. And he ran perfectly straight in that direction.
I'm pretty sure he didn't do that because I watched it. And I watched it back to see if there was any change of direction. There was not. He is jogging in a straight line.
I'll tell you what, though. You did watch it back, and fair enough, you checked to see if there's a change of direction, and there was none. Did you watch it back with the intention of thinking, I wonder if he pulls out a sat-nav? Because sometimes you don't notice.
I don't want to big myself up. I don't want to be too self-aggrandizing. But if there's one thing I'm quite good at, it's spotting when someone takes a sat-nav out of their pockets while playing professional sports.
I usually have to go back over games to look at that.
I've never missed a time in which a professional athlete, during a game, has taken a sat-nav out of their pocket.
You know what?
Right? There was a really subtle one that happened in the ping pong at the Olympics.
That was really controversial, actually.
Because
the guy figured out he had to go to the other side of the table, because that's where the ball was headed. But thankfully, he lost the point anyway, because the ball travels quite fast in ping pong.
The ball just moved straight past him. It was really, really dumb.
It was really stupid to get your sat-nav out. You don't have time, man.
Yeah, I mean, it cost him his first straight Olympic medal. It was very, very stupid. Yes, so the Lions at some point have someone sent to the sin bin, and I don't know who it was, and I don't want to find out.
Fair enough. It was Stephen Ferris.
It was Stephen Ferris? Did he jog in a straight line?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was sat nav to find the sin bin.
Stephen Ferris then gets injured and goes off.
Full house.
Yeah.
He gets a try, he gets a yellow card, and he gets an injury.
That's the forward's dream. His career end, tour ending, and he goes home. Yeah, bless Stephen Ferris, who had a weird. There was like a weird 48-hour period where Stephen Ferris kept mentioning me, and it was odd. The other week, where he mentioned me on two programs he was doing, two like punditry gigs. He mentioned me twice, and he tweeted about me. And he's just, I wish Stephen Ferris didn't fancy me so much. But there we go. No, it was very flattering. Thank you, Stephen, who is not listening.
Who is definitely, he's listening.
Stephen Ferris is not listening. So,
he better be listening.
The Lions start to pull ahead a bit, and then suddenly up pops our boy, Dumas.
Yes. Potgitter sets the try up, and it's a really, really nice try in the end. And then, like, not long after that as well, they have their prop, Dupria, scores a try, which is just from really terrible defence. And you love it when these Tory sides score tries against the Lions, and you just go, oh, this should be concerning, because that was very bad. But, yeah, and, I mean, that Dupria lad is huge. And just tumbles over Lee Byrne like he's not there.
It's a classic forward-bumping someone at amateur rugby try.
Yeah. Yeah, properly. And
lines him up, bam, then grounds has the ball in one arm so that he can ground it over the guy's shoulder.
Yeah. And at that point, so the teams go in at half time having scored two tries apiece, but the Lions are still slightly in the lead. But then the Cheetahs start to pull it back a bit, especially when the Lions think, oh, I've got a tactic, lads. Why don't we give it to Shane? Which is usually a pretty good thing. And then it doesn't go very well. Shane gives an interception pass, and unfortunately, Francois Ace goes the whole way, and the Cheetahs are very much back in the game.
Yeah.
The thing I love about this try, right? So Francois Ace, who is, of course, a flanker, and a quick flanker at that, he takes the ball from Shane Williams, who it's a really panicked offload that he gives, and he starts sprinting the length of the field. And then Doel Dimas just runs up outside and like, yeah, give me the ball. I can sprint in there faster. In case, you know, thinking, sometimes it happens, you get the interception, you're in the clear, but you think, I'm going to give it to the quicker guy anyway, just to ensure this is a try. And the whole time, Ace is just kind of staring at him, just like, just ignoring him, just like, no, I'm going to go the whole way with this. No, stop asking for the ball, Daywell.
He runs out towards the touchline rather than towards the post in order to, you know, get away from the cover, and then jogs back in towards the post when he realises he's clear.
Yeah. And also him running towards the touchline is to kind of cock block his mate who's trying to ask for the ball from him.
A little bit. You know, they run over towards each other. Maybe they're just having a little chat. Maybe they just, you know, they want to catch up. They want to talk about what it's like to sign for Aroni.
Forgive me, it's Cornet Ace, not Francois Ace. My bad. Who scores the try? Who's the centre rather than the flanker? But he's quick anyway, regardless.
Yeah. So, should we talk about the pass by Shane Williams?
We can. It's not good.
It's really not good, is it?
I don't know.
I also want to mention, I didn't realise this, Cornet Ace played 11 games for Newcastle and 5 for Sale.
Did he?
I have no memory of him whatsoever.
I don't remember him either. No. But
he left Newcastle mid-season, went to Sale, barely played for either of them. And then that was that. That was his career.
Okay. I don't know if we're planning on doing a man of the match and a dick of the day for every single game.
I was thinking.
But I think Shane Williams has this wrapped up if we are.
It's very... Shane Williams is reigning World Player of the Year at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had done basically nothing when given the, you know, on the first couple of games. And it's very clearly him trying too hard.
Yeah.
Like, he panics and chucks a pass that was never on for a second. And like, there isn't even really the support. Like, nothing would have come of it, you know. It's just someone else would have been tackled.
It would have been an extra
same
couple
spot.
Of yards, if that. Yeah,
if that. I don't think anything good is coming of him throwing that pass.
Yeah,
but he throws it anyway. You know, it's obvious. Fancy doing too much. It's terrible. Yeah. It's very bad by Shane Williams.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you want to stick him on the dick of the day tally, then you can probably do that.
I think we should do this. I think we should pick a man of the match and dick of the day for each game.
Okay. When we have like nothing to go off on the.
Yep, we're going off the highlights. Hey, we did it with DJ Khaled. So
it's very true. It's very true. And I will add, so the score was 24-26 to the Lions. And then in the last play of the game, well, the sort of second to last play of the game, it was 78 minutes. Potgieter goes for a drop goal. And it's an incredible attempt.
It's Stravin, the replacement.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
He goes for a drop goal from about 50 yards out, and it's very close to getting it over. And obviously, that would have won the game, and the Lions can consider that a lucky escape that they've come away from this game, and they won 26-24.
Yeah, no, it was a really good strike, and fair play for him going for it.
It looks like the Cheetahs were much the better team, going off the highlights.
Yeah, I mean,
the Lions started well, but the Lions... it looks like they kind of got dominated for the rest of the game.
I didn't get that impression, but I think Strivum, very I love the balls of him call, like he's screaming for it a few phases early and then only narrowly misses it from, as you say, about 47 meters. Like he's just inside
it's
his own half.
It's a great strike,
just
it's a brilliant strike
half, rather. Really good strike, really close, and he's not so directly between post or anything, like he is, you know. It's a really difficult kick, like we're looking at basically only the one and only Tynes Kotsur nailing that. So if only they'd brought Tynes Kotsur in by now.
Yeah.
You know, he was probably still filling out his UCAS form at this point. So he wasn't quite there. But still, okay, so should we do man of the match first?
Yes, my man of the match. Going off just the highlights, it always makes it a much less fair representation. My man of the match is going to be Damor Damas.
Yes, I'm going for Damor Damas as well.
Yeah.
Damor Damas.
Just based on the highlights alone, it's definitely not a fair representation of who was the best player in the game, because it's quite hard to tell, obviously, going off a five-minute highlights package, but sure, it's Damas.
Nah, I think it's pretty accurate. I think we're pretty spot-on on everything we say and do.
So, game number two?
No, Dick of the Day. Dick of the Day.
Oh, Dick
Shane
of the
Williams.
Day. Shane Williams, yeah.
It's Shane Williams. So
I could game... of course, be really petulant to our good friend of the pod, Tom Savage, and give it to Keith Earls instead. But no, Shane Williams.
It's Shane Williams.
Which probably puts him in the lead in terms of the tally of this tour.
No, he's level with Keith Earls.
Oh, okay.
On Dick of the Day. And Damor Damas is level with Lee Byrne on Man of the Matches. So can we get Damor Damas?
Man of the Series.
He plays again against for South Africa A against the Lions.
Of course.
So he could be Man of the Series.
Could tie this up. Oh man, that would be.
Man, what a signing Aroni Mays. So the second game, or the fourth game on tour, was against the Sharks. This was another rugby match. The Lions made a lot of changes to the team. They thankfully did not put Lufus Choad at 12 again. He moved onto the wing. Jamie Robertson, Brian O'Driscoll came in the centres.
They brought in two guys called Jamie Robertson, Brian O'Driscoll in the centres.
Ben Williams played 14, which is always unlikely. I don't like it. Yeah, it makes me like, it makes my skin itch.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
We had Rodogar and Mike Phillips as halfbacks. Which, you know, like when halfbacks are famously always chippy and, you know, have something to say. It helps when it's not against each other.
Sure. Because those two famously have a very rocky relationship.
And, yeah.
I think one of them has spoken about art since and said that didn't change on this tour, that they were still very chirpy with each other when they were still on the same team.
So about 2 months after the Lions tour, I think start of the following season, the sort of 2009-10 season, one of the guys asked about the tests, and he said he felt he should have started all three tests. It took him a few months to say it. Unlike Finn Russell, it took him a week. I actually think, right, it says a lot about Warren Gatland and how afraid of him Finn was that you wait until he was out of isolation to say that.
Of course.
Because
given, you know,
he's several times dropped Gregor Townsend in it immediately after games.
Yeah, he
waited a full week to say anything about Gatland.
The 2019 Scotland-England game where literally he was, as soon as the final whistle went, they pulled him for an interview and then he basically just like, oh yeah, I've just told Gregor to fuck off at half time and said, no, I'm going to play my own game. I think his tactics were just completely, you know, nuts.
And we saw Finn interviewed after full time and he didn't say that, but he did say it a week on. So I think he's clearly, he has a great level of respect, but mostly fear for Gatland.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, he waited until Gatland was stuck in isolation in New Zealand for him to say it. Like, he's got to wait 14 days before he can get me. O'Gara said he should start all three tests.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, well, they kept talking about combinations, but I don't have a problem with Mike Phillips. That season, the Ospreys and Munster were drawn in the Heineken Cup, and O'Gara and Phillips famously didn't shake hands after the game. They walked straight past each other without making eye contact.
And it was great because it was one of those unspoken moments of disrespect. And that, for me, is what makes rugby different, is
absolutely
the lack of values. And I'm here for it. I love it.
I want more.
Shut up, ruck.co.uk.
Like, in order for that to happen in football, like, Wayne Bridge had to sleep with John Terry's wife. Right? Whereas for it to happen in rugby, just two people had to be massive pricks and meat.
Yeah, literally. And the thing is, right, that definitely happens all the time in rugby. There'll be so many examples we're not aware of, and that's great.
And it always happened recently on Twitter. Ellis Genge didn't shake someone's hand. And everyone on Twitter went for him.
Yeah. And him not clapping in the tunnel, and everyone was like, this is disgraceful. And it's just like,
No, it's not. Like, Grow up.
He lost a game playing for his country. Like, he's dreamt of doing this his whole life. Of course he wants to win. There was another one where...
And especially a player like Ellis Genge, right, who has come from nowhere. You know, he's come from a really rough bit of Bristol. He had no shot of doing this. This is beyond a dream come true, to be representing England.
Yeah.
You know, let him do it. It's not like there's a lot of kind of posh boys who've gone, well, when I grow up, I'm going to play for England. Yeah. Whereas for the likes of Genge and Sinclair and so on,
and like,
it's, we've come from, you know, very working class backgrounds. It wasn't a consideration. It wasn't something you could do. So this, yes, it means a lot.
There's a lot of things that Ellis Genge does that I'm against, you know, and that is definitely not one of them. There was one, I think it was in the France-Australia tests over the summer, where there was an example of somebody goes to shake somebody's hand and the other guy just goes, no, you're all right. And that was caught on camera. And I can't remember for the life of me who it was. I'm going to have to find
this. Classic France.
Yeah.
Classic France. Yeah. Bloody Carbonell, wasn't it?
Yeah, it probably was, to be honest. I can't remember who it was. It might not have even been France Australia, but I will find this.
No, that was such a fun ramshackle series. I can't imagine there being any controversy around
this. That's true, actually. Yeah. Everyone enjoyed
it. The only
it
controversy
so much,
was which test was best.
Everyone enjoyed it so much that they avoided the whole values talk afterwards because they actually enjoyed the rugby more than usual. Moving on to the opposition. So they had Stefan Terblanche at fullback, Ospreys legend.
This was
Rory
Stefan
Cockett playing at nine.
Yeah, so Stefan Terblanche, post Ospreys but pre Ulster.
Yeah.
So a weird mid period in Stefan Terblanche's career. You know, like the weird experimental album in the middle.
Andreas Strauss, who is Adrian's brother, of course.
And so at 10, they have M. Drummond, and I thought it was Mitch Drummond, but it's Monty Drummond, who I've never heard of.
Monty Dumont. So Rory Cockett and Johan Muller, who of course both went to Ulster as well after this. Keegan Daniel at number 8. Like, it's actually a really good team.
Andres
Botez, of course. Luozzi and Vovo on the bench. Charles McLeod on the bench. Michael Rhodes is on the bench. Pre-Saracens.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You forget
he's
somewhere in a financial district of London pre-practice to play for Saracens. Like, there was a career before it. Is it Luozzi and Vovo on the bench?
And, like, I'm looking at this, and, like, with all the teams we've watched the Lions play against so far, I'm thinking,
Stephen Sykes?
Remember
Stephen Sykes?
Yeah. I'm looking at this and thinking, like, this is the best 15 they've played against. The final score was Natal Sharks 3, Lions 39.
Yeah, did not go particularly well. But then it's also probably the best 15 the Lions have put out. It's the one closer to the team that started.
Very true.
It pretty much, actually, I think it is the team that started. Over the Adam Jones in at tight head for Phil Vickery.
Yeah, it's
over and
largely a test team.
So the two wings aside.
Yeah, the wingers kind of swap.
The wingers and Adam Jones, so there's, and I suppose Ronald O'Gara, are the only change. So it's 11 of the 15 that starts the first test are starting there.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much the core of the team. And again, you're putting the World Player of the Year in on the wing, you know, for Ugo Monyo or Tommy Bowe. Yeah. Like, that's not a big loss.
No.
You're putting the tight head that ends up starting because he's the best tight head they had on tour.
Sure, yeah. So the Lions only score one try in the first half, and that is through Liam Mears. And did you see his try celebration after this?
Yes, I did, actually.
Yeah.
I was... I mean, look, we've heard a lot of stories about Liam Mears and the sort of things he get up to. And it's, you know, it's a really nice try. You know, Mike Phillips, or, you know, nice forwards try. There's a lot of sort of rumbling. Mike Phillips spots a bit of a gap, goes through, offloads. They're stopped 1 yard short, and Mears just kind of spots opportunity, drives over. I remember at the time thinking he'd been the Lions' best player in that first 20 minutes when they played quite poorly.
Yeah, sure.
So he scores the try. He goes right over. And he instantly transitions. Like, he becomes almost a different person the moment he scores.
He looks quite different, doesn't he?
Maybe
his attire is quite different.
He suddenly doesn't look like a professional rugby player.
Certainly not a British Lion.
He looks like someone who, I don't know, would sell some sort of snack.
I think I would, and please pull me up if you disagree with me, man. Like, look, you can trust me, right? We've got this. But like, he looks like the sort of guy who's maybe selling some crisps.
You think crisps?
I think crisps. Mainly because of the t-shirt he wears that says, I sell crisps.
Yeah.
But his try celebration is to take his t-shirt off, put on a different one. In fact, wait, didn't need to put on a different one. He has the other one beneath
him. He has it underneath.
And then he goes into the crowd and starts selling them and some opposition players who are on the bench.
It was
some crisps.
You remember Mario Balotelli? Lifting up his t-shirt and having the "Why is it always me?"
Yeah,
he does that. Liam Mears turns the camera, pulls up his shirt, and it says "I sell crisps."
Yeah, exactly. And then he starts selling some of the opposition replacements some crisps. Luazi Mvovo was the player who turned them down. Was like, no, I don't want them. But Michael Rhodes took a few bags. Pat Cilliers took a few bags.
Pat Cilliers.
Craig Burden was playing.
Pat Cilliers just eats a full bag of Watsits, right? And if you check World Rugby's laws, he should have been banned. And I think they let him off because this is technically an exhibition match. It's not in competition. If this had happened in, say, the Six Nations World Rugby Championship, Tri-Nations as it was at the time, Pat Cilliers would have been banned for 6 months for accepting crisps from Lee Mears on the field. However, they let him off with only a 1 week suspension.
Mm.
And obviously, the Sharks weren't playing the following weekend. So nothing came of it. He was all right to play for the emerging Springboks a few weeks later.
Here's the thing. How many crisps would you say are in a bag of Watsits?
40?
Exactly. Like, I need an exact number rather
42? Hold on. Should I get a bag of crisps 42. And count?
No.
I've got some combos over there.
So, 42. That means he paid £4.62 to Lee Mears at that point.
Wow.
He sells his crisps for 11p each, as we established
before. Yeah, of course.
So yeah, that was one of the weirder try celebrations of the tour. He sold a few crisps.
So okay. So look, Pat Cilliers, right? Obviously, I'm not gonna say he's some kind of like Chili Boy Ralapele or anything.
No,
right?
Of course not. Of course not.
But we did see him take performance enhancing crisps in this game.
Maybe Chili Heatwave Boy Ralapele.
We did see him take performance enhancing crisps in this game, right? We then saw a few, fast forward 3 years on from here, right? Cilliers, he's played for the emerging Springboks. He's been hanging around kind of South African rugby for quite a while, yet to win that elusive South African cap, right?
Yeah.
At which point, Heineke Meyer, the then Springboks coach, goes, I need two people to join my squad, two people to be called up for the upcoming series, the upcoming rugby championship. And so, do you know who the two players he calls up are?
Pat Cilliers.
At once.
And Chiliboy Ralapele.
Sia Khaleesi.
Oh my God.
He calls up for their first caps, Pat Cilliers and Sia Khaleesi. Okay? So those two players are brought into the squad instantly.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Khaleesi goes on, as we see, from to be exactly what he needed and be one of the all-time greats, right?
I've just remembered what happened to Cilius.
Yeah.
He went to London Irish, didn't he?
He went to London Irish to be nearer the Kettle Chips factory.
Oh, never mind.
Okay. And when he got there, he was gutted to discover that they sell Kettle Chips. You know how Lee Mears sold crisp and 10p a crisp?
11p, actually.
11p a crisp, sorry. And so, obviously, they were pretty expensive to buy a bag, right?
Yeah.
Pat Cilius went for he could go directly to the factory and get the crisps cheaper than for a wholesaler like Lee Mears. And when he got to the factory, he discovered that actually Kettle Chips charge you 16p per crisp. And that's why they're so posh.
That's shocking, that is. That is shocking.
Yeah.
So basically, and so, Lee Mears, but bargain.
It was what happened to him, right? Because he'd reached this point in which, because the IAB had worked out no way to test your urine for crisps, no one realised that the entire way through his career, from this moment on, from the moment Lee Mears offered him some Watsits, Pat Cilius was taking crisps his entire career, right? Heineken Mayer found out and made him watch an inspirational tutorial on Sir Khaleesi on how great he was and how he got here completely without ever eating a crisp in his life. But Pat Cilius remained addicted to crisps. And I say, it wasn't until he went to London Irish and realised how extortionate prices in London are for everything that he was forced to finally contemplate his future. And really, he turned himself around at London Irish, which is something that's never happened. It's the only time anyone's ever done anything of any moral worth at London Irish, who are a bankrupt club who continue to enable sex offenders.
Yeah, wankers.
Well, if only they were.
Yeah, oh.
No, sorry. Yeah, I don't know.
That's okay. Rugby, maybe.
So, what happened in the game?
Second half.
So, the Lions do score another try in that first half. Oh, no, it is second half, isn't it? Yeah. So, Mike Phillips scores a try. The first angle, it looks like, you know, well taken gap by Mike Phillips. He then, you know, does that thing of not passing and eventually scores himself in the corner.
He slides around the winger, dummies past the fullback. It's a very nice solo try.
Did you see it from the reverse angle?
I did.
The kind of behind the post angle.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see how big the gap around the ruck was?
Yeah. And it's just that thing of every scrum half has tried to make that break before. But usually defenders don't leave you a gap that big, so it's not that easy.
No. Right. I was watching that game on TV as a 15-year-old or whatever I was in Nottingham, right? A 10-year-old, how old was I? I don't know. Age?
Six.
14, I think. Right? I was closer to the ruck than the first defender, than the guard was.
Yeah. I think I was in the living room shouting, yeah, I'm first post.
Yeah. it was absurd. You could have driven Lee Mears' crisp van through it. It was genuinely about a sixth of the field left open near the ruck.
Yeah, it was pretty poor, but a very well taken try by Phillips.
There is one really defender in the way, and that's the referee. The referee is stood in the way, and he's the only thing in any way impeding Mike Phillips from going straight through.
No, I do enjoy Phillips' finish on this, though. Like, I like the way he slides upside that winger, and then I like the dummy pass that he was realistically never going to throw, even the fullback did commit to him. It was good, and you know, he finishes it well, and he probably still talks about it to this day. So yeah.
Of course he does, Mike Phillips. There's another really nice try that the Lions score So I remember watching this try back on YouTube because it's a really nice try where Brian O'Driscoll makes a break down the wing, then gives the pass right at the last second to Luke Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Where it's really good. Like, it's has the initial burst of acceleration. He's holding the ball in one hand, transfers it to two hands, dummies it, then waits until the ball into Stephen Tablanche. It's completely fixed onto him. Then passes to Fitzgerald, 2 yards from the line.
Because it looks like he's going to butcher it at some point, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it looks
like
at some point he's going to run at the wrong speed or in the wrong direction or something. And it's like, no. He's just running like he's intending to go the whole distance. So obviously people have to pincer in on him. And then he just gives Luke Fitzgerald so much time and space to get in the corner to say how close to the try line and the defence they were. It's brilliant by O'Driscoll. And it's just him playing with his head up at full speed and giving a really crisp pass at the very last second.
I remember watching that try back on YouTube around the time in 2009, and there being a comment saying, my favourite thing about this try is that you can see Fitzgerald learning as he's scoring it, that he just wants to get the ball early and blast down the wing. And O'Driscoll instead makes him wait, makes him watch, makes, you know, waits until the defender's gone, then lets him finish it, then lets him score it. And I think, you know, I think there's something in that, even if it is, a bit tautly put. And I think there's something quite nice in the fact that you can see when you watch it back now, Fitzgerald is frustrated that Bodd doesn't give him the ball right away.
And he
calls for him, you know, and he then gets way too flat because he's, you know, tried to time his run onto a pass that Bodd doesn't throw. And then when he eventually does, there's no way Fitzgerald isn't finishing it. Like, he is, Bodd has taken everyone else out. It's really, it's proper like masterclass in how to, in broken field rugby.
And the way best thing too about many players learning, can't fix isn't
it? Absolutely. It's values and learning.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So then Lee Byrne scores a try on the 69th minute.
That's pretty nice. So, yeah, that's, I mean, really nicely taken. Stuart Barnes compares the try he scored against France in the Six Nations that year because it is very similar. Except that one, Byrne had to pick a really great line. Here,
he has to pick a line.
And
it's
then,
a great run to finish it. You know, he does a nice little swerve inside somebody. There's a huge fend he puts in.
It's a classic. I mean, I don't know how relatable a thing this is. It's a classic, it's raining and I'm wearing trainers, not boots step. Because he has to really slow down and shuffle around him, but he's still got the agility to do it. And the,
wear boots because I need all the help I can get.
See, I like to handicap myself because otherwise it'd be too good.
Yeah. All right, Lee Byrne. But yeah, no, it's a good step to finish.
Hey,
it.
And then, listen up. Cash for gold. Do you want to buy a necklace for 20 quid?
Oh, I remember those adverts.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee Byrne. For anyone unfamiliar,
Dragons
Lee Byrne,
captain Lee Byrne.
Lee Byrne, prior to that, it was around this time. It was just after this... just after this Lions tour, when he got back and was a huge star, having, you know, been Wales' best player in that Six Nations, then really good player for the Lions before he got injured. He, you know, his profile had rocketed in Wales. And Lee Byrne became the face of Cash for Gold, which is a company that gives you money in exchange for gold.
It's a pretty good business plan.
Yeah. And he did. There was an advert that used to play quite often on S4C, the Welsh Language Channel. But it would also play before basically any video you tried to watch in on Wales Online, which this is back in the day when videos had to really, really buffer as well. So it used to take you like a minute for it to warm up so that Lee Byrne, through some pixels, could shout at you, "Hey, listen up!" And then it would zoom in and he would be there standing, holding like a gold necklace and say, "Do you have gold? You should sell it for money." And he'd take some money out of his pocket. And then he'd go, "Why not go to Cash for Gold? We have locations in Newport, Swansea, and Cardiff. Why not go there now?" And then you would automatically go to Cash for Gold because Lee Byrne was so convincing.
Lee Byrne just loves throwing around dollar bills, you know?
Yeah.
Just loves getting cash money out of his pocket and just saying, "Hey, bro, you want this? Give me some gold."
Is this the most capitalist Lions squad ever? Between Lee Mears and Lee Byrne. Wait a minute, it's just people called Lee. Lee Halfpenny. Oh, yeah. What does Lee Halfpenny sell?
Spelled
differently.
Don't really
know. So is this?
Yeah, it's true.
Does it get him out of it?
Wrong.
Yeah.
Not. It's not spelled wrong. It's just spelled not the correct way to be a fat capitalist lion.
The one in Robin Hood, like King John in Robin Hood.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually Lee Byrne's nickname.
That's King Lee John. Byrne now.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the least Byrne trying for.
Yeah, yeah, I think we've covered that pretty well. His celebration is then to just throw dollar bills at the opposition players. Which Pat Cilley then picks up in an attempt to find Lee Mears on the bench.
Yeah. Jamie Heaslip scores a really shit try.
So I didn't find this on the highlights package. What happens?
Oh, so the Lions are given two penalties in a row on the 5-meter line, and Heaslip taps one of them, and the defending player just looks at him and doesn't move, and then Heaslip falls over the line.
Literally, that try was so forgettable, or whatever. Like, I literally didn't notice him score it on the highlights package.
Yeah.
I literally missed that try. I watched it, but I missed it.
Like, it's... His decision to take the quick tap isn't necessarily the right decision. Then there's no defence, so he scores.
Yeah, okay.
It's a really bad try from all possible angles.
Sure. Should we just do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day quickly for this? So, Man of the Match, I'm just going to say Brian O'Driscoll.
I was going to say Mike Phillips.
Yeah, fair enough. Who's Dick of the Day? It's got to be Pat Cilliers, surely.
Oh, that's a good shout. I was going to say the year 2009. No, but I will agree with you and go Pat Cilliers for ruining his career and starting on the crisp train, which when you go on the crisp train, you can never get off.
It never stops. Yeah.
The Lions then moved on to play the Western Province. And so this is a really weird highlights package because we basically watch a bunch of Lions tries and we're going, oh, okay, they're running away with the game. And then suddenly it cuts to one Western Province try, and you think, oh, they pulled one back. You know, they've got a consolation try.
Yeah.
Then you realise, wait a second,
suddenly
this
they've
makes
got
it
like
23
20
all.
Points. Yeah.
Yeah. This makes it 23 all with conversion to come. The conversion could put them ahead.
Yeah.
It's like it skips all of the drama.
Yeah. And it seems like this is a really close game, but like on the highlights, it does not do that justice whatsoever because the Lions score three tries and the Province only score one. So it feels quite. One-sided on the highlights package, but yeah, it's a really confusing game from this position.
It's part of the problem of A, rugby, and B, highlights in rugby is often people assume that scoring or the big runs and tries are the most exciting thing. And sometimes you then miss the actual feel of the game in highlights in a way that's, you know, at least in football, the big moment is clearly the big moment, right? Yeah. Whereas in rugby, as it's known, you don't know, the game's so nebulous that yes, tries are always going to be big, but everything beyond that, you know, could be almost as important.
So before we look at the Lions team, I would like to look at the Western Province team because there are two Dragons legends in this team. There is Dragons legend Brock Harris,
Glenn Vermeulen,
and Dragons legend Tondarai Shivanga on the right wing, who are, you know, both great players and great guys, as far as I can see.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a moment where my first note on this game is, oh my God, Dewald Duvenaga's at scrum half.
Yes.
Treviso captain. Because I have no scope of how old he is.
He is 33 years old, I can tell you now.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's sort of... I have seen Dewald Duvenaga play many times over a very long... 12 years, it turns out, right? I sort of don't know who he is.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Like, I have seen Dwight Duvenaga play probably, like, 50 times, right? I have seen him play a lot of rugby.
Yeah.
I don't know who he is. I don't know who this guy is. I know
he
is a South African scrum half.
That was... Yeah. So, as well as them... So, yeah, as you
say... Oh, mate, this is a superb team. I love this team. Speaking of, right,
team,
another...
Two Ospreys legends on the bench.
No, we're in one club legend, right? We've got another Treviso legend. His halfback partner is Willem Duval. Do you remember Willem Duval?
So I vaguely remember Willem Duval. I don't remember him being at Treviso.
Willem, just before we started recording, we were just saying South Africa always produces this fly half, a certain fly half, right? A fly half who just kicks the lever off the ball, is a really accurate goal kicker, and does basically nothing else, right? Like, Morley says the face of them. Morley says has more to his game, you know, and so on. Then you've got Yanni Davia, you've got... Uros is very much the Tiger Woods of rugby.
Oh, of course he was.
Joel Stransky was that 10. Yeah, Mornay Steyn was that 10 for most of his career. He had a patch of about 3 years where he's a far more balanced 10, but he's gone back to being that now. And yeah, I mean, Yanni Dabia, we mentioned. You mentioned someone as well. It was a really good shout.
I can't remember. I can't remember. Anyway,
That fly half, that very kicking fly half, right? Willem de Waal was the absolute pinnacle of that kind of player. He was a really good goal kicker, and that was it. And he then, after this tour, signed for Treviso during their first season in the Pro 14 or the Magnus League.
Right, I do not remember
him. Yeah, so he signed to play in the Magnus League for Treviso, and he won a number of games then with late kicks and from kicking goals from everywhere.
Okay.
Like, he was a really good signing for them during that kind of early period when they were first good and beating teams, kind of mid-table team in the Pro 14. Very good player. Very good goal kicker, Willem de Waal. And I'd forgotten him until looking at his team sheet, but he was someone I used to, think about surprisingly often.
So on the bench, they've got two Ospreys legends in JJ Engelbrecht, who doesn't make it onto the pitch, and De Kock Steenkamp is on the bench.
I think those two
one game for the Ospreys.
I think those two played about four games of the Ospreys between them.
I reckon between them they clocked up about 60 minutes.
Because JJ Engelbrecht played, I think, three games and then got injured.
Gio Plun's also on the bench.
Yeah, De Kock Steenkamp came in injured, then played one game, got injured again, and got released from his contract.
Right. Okay.
But he was there for like 3 years. Mm. The Western Province team is great. Like, and I want to take a moment.
You're kind of he's on the
team. He's on the wing. You know, obviously at this point has six caps for Africa.
San Diego Legion legend Joe Pederson
took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah,
the Legion's own Joe Pederson.
Oh, captain, my captain.
He's at fullback. I mean, you've got Peter Grant at 12, who's another player I've completely forgotten about.
I don't remember Peter Grant.
He was the Springbok starting 12 for one season, and then never got back in. Played 10 or 12.
And there's a little known guy called Duane Vermeulen, seven for them.
Mate, I want to keep going on this. Anton van Zyl.
Yeah.
Anton van Zyl is, really good second row.
Went to France for a bit.
Yeah.
Liebenberg.
Anton van Zyl is one of those players that is always in Barbarians teams.
Yeah, sure. He's a perfect, uncapped bar.
People
kind of recognise,
Then, the back row, they have, Duane Vermeulen, who obviously didn't get to play against the Lions this year, but he did tick that box in 2009. This was when I first heard of Duane Vermeulen watching that game.
Yeah, me too.
I remember
too,
being very good and being very impressed by him. And I watched this back on YouTube as well. Andy Powell makes a huge and completely illegal shot on him.
That
would be a card nowadays.
Yeah. That was actually where I first heard of Duane Vermeulen, was from that video before he got properly into the Springboks team to replace PSBs.
He was 22, 23 at this point, I think.
So he's 35 now, Duane Vermeulen. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. 23, and he then went on to win. It was a few years before he won his first cap. I remember when Duane Vermeulen won his first cap in 2012, being kind of surprised because it felt like he'd been around a long time.
Sure, yeah. I get
you. But it meant that he kind of arrived into international rugby fully formed.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Rather than arriving into
the team. He's stuck around being just as good ever since.
You also have in the back row with him Luke Watson.
Who's Luke Watson?
So Luke Watson was one of the kind of great lost players.
I don't remember.
So he was hyped up enormously as a youngster, and it never really happened for him. He just was injury torn the entire time because his father played for the Springboks well and was famously one of the kind of there's a whole thing about I forget the exact details of the story, but his father was a really big force in white players taking a stand against apartheid. In South Africa, and he made a point of going to play in kind of mixed race games, back when players from different ethnic minorities were separated off and weren't allowed to play in the kind of primary divisions. He, despite being a Springbok, went off and played in a lot of the games for mixed race and so on.
That's cool.
And so his son then came through and was this, real phenomenon who played when he was 18 playing Super Rugby and was brilliant and, called right into the Springboks, was made captain when he was 11 and was seen as the next big thing. He was seen as going to be a huge deal. And in the end, he won 10 caps in the end, but that was kind of it. He went to Bath, captain Bath for 2 years. And then, it kind of just didn't happen. He was just spent his entire career injured. He's only 37 now. So, he should have been playing until quite recently, but instead he retired in 2011.
Right. I don't really remember him at all. Well, I don't remember the name or anything. So, that's a shame.
But he was one of those super hyped up. That's a good back row with Pete Lowe as well.
So very quickly, we'll go over the Lions team. So Tommy Bowe and Rob Carney come back into the team. Stephen Jones starts at 10. Like Martin Williams comes in. It's again, it's a very good team. Like there's a lot of test quality players who jump straight back in.
But the bench is fun. Shane Williams covers 9.
Wow, I do not remember this.
Shane Williams was the cover scrum half.
Wow. Wasn't used.
I think Harry Gordon Ellis Darcy's got ill or something.
On the bench.
Of course, Gordon Darcy had been called up by this point as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. He also doesn't make it on, which is a shame for him. But it was a tight game, so
Tommy literally just arrived.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, fair enough. So Tommy Bowe scored the first try.
Yes. Mike Blair was due to start, pulled out of an ankle problem, and Shane Williams came in to cover 9.
Okay.
Just to tie that up. Yes, brilliant opening try.
So it starts with Andy Powell has quite a good run, and then Martin Williams' skills are just unbelievable. He does this really nice little wrap round pass to free up quite a lot of space. Rob Carney times his pass perfectly, and Tommy Bowe has what originally looks like a run in. Well, no, what he makes look like a run-in because he's not got a lot of space. And then he's wrapped up brilliantly by Peterson, who makes an incredible tackle on him. And it is a world-class finish by Bowe, who managed to wriggle over the top of him to ground the ball. It's insane strength. Superhuman.
It's an unbelievable finish by Tommy Bowe. Yeah. Right? If you look at it, as you say, he sort of catches the ball and he's got, like, you can see the try line in front of him.
Yeah.
But then on converge, because the lines have all been working in one direction, the entire defence has drifted across onto him.
Yeah.
So he has, like, at least 8 or 9, probably more, defenders coming across, and all of them are completely in sync. It's like they're related, right? So he has 10 siblings coming across to try and tackle him, and he still manages to get the ball down.
10 siblings?
He managed to get the ball down. It is much like their mother died suddenly.
Christ.
It's a fantastic finish.
It's world class by Bowe. The strength he shows is so insanely good. Like for any rugby player, let alone a winger.
Watching that video is the best video of Tommy Bowe you'll see, unless you watch that clip of him presenting breakfast TV.
Oh, it's unbelievably good.
It's the most Alan like accidental partridge thing I've ever seen.
Especially from a rugby player as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God bless you, Tommy Bowe.
God doesn't need to bless him again. He's already given him everything. No, very true. Look at that guy.
Such as the power to not only score, but also assist.
Yes.
So he takes the ball on the outside of Stephen Jones and just decides to crash through tackles. Like, he just crashes through men who are, like, loads bigger than him and stronger. So, like,
really well-picked line.
Yeah. And he skates past a few people. And just as he starts to fall off balance, he kind of posts the ball over the top of the last defender to Ugo Monya, who finishes the try brilliantly. Like, he sprints it in. Like, he's still got some work to do, Monya.
Very different type of finish. But Monya goes really low, really early. And there's never any doubt over it, despite the fact there are people around him. And there's lots of players who would blow that try.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So that was Tommy Bowe just looking unbelievable for 7 minutes there. And then Martin Williams scores the next try, where the line's been plugging away at the line for a little bit. And then Martin Williams is the one who sort of drives over on the blind side and dots it down. It's a very technically smart finish.
Classic Nugget doing Nugget things.
Yeah.
Of him kind of, everyone is picking and driving and trying to be out physical and everything. He then smuggles the ball off someone and dives under them. Kind of under their legs.
Yeah.
Comes up with a try.
It's very, a very smart finish by forward.
Very Martin Williams. Yeah. I love that guy.
And afterwards, so the Lions are a few tries up. And as you say, so Willem de Waal gives Joe Peterson a brilliant pass over the top to score in the corner. And like at this point, the Province had been really plugging away at the Lions. Like Peterson himself had done a really nice flick pass to get them into the position in the first place. And then it happened to be him who finished it on the end. And yeah, I just think it's stuff like that that gets him to sign for the greatest team in the history of MLR, the San Diego Legion.
For the Free Jacks?
No.
Sign for the New England Free Jacks?
Nah, man.
When did Joe Peterson sign for the New England Free Jacks?
He's playing for...
We don't need him. We've got Bowden Wacker and Dougie Fife anyway. Harry Boyd. This really good.
He's the Legion captain. He's
Harry Barlow. Harry Boyd's the 10. Yeah, but which leaves things 23 all. Peterson can't make the conversion. And so, what is required but a 45-metre penalty attempt by the one and only Mr. James Huquet? He steps up, he bangs it, he nails it, and Stuart Barnes says the following line of commentary. That is a kick.
It was a kick. I don't know if it still is, but
he doesn't even put emphasis on that is a kick. He just says, that is a kick. Like a child.
He's got a point.
Looking out the window, spotting a red car.
It was a very good kick by James Hook. He absolutely nailed it with 4 minutes to go and the pressure on him. And the Lions won 23-26 as a result of that winning kick with 4 minutes to go. It was 23.
Another interesting thing is the referee was called Mark Lawrence. And when he stands over the kick and he kind of marches James Hook back a few inches at one point before he lines that winner up, and Miles Harrison says, Mark Lawrence, I had forgotten the referee, Mark Lawrence, and I thought they were referring to the director of a number of Hugh Grant rom-coms, such as The Rewrite. Did you hear about the Morgan music and lyrics? He did the Noel on Disney Plus the other year, the Anna Kendrick is Santa Now film. I thought that was, he wrote Miss Congeniality, and then he started refereeing and made James Hook move back a few inches. So good on Mark Lawrence. Should we move on to the next game?
Wait, quick man of the match, dick of the day.
Oh, man of the match, dick of the day. Man of the match is Tommy Bowe.
Martin Williams for me. Dick of the day, I have no idea. Maybe, let's say...
I'm going to say dick of the day is the guy who put together the highlights package, because you get no sense of the feel of the game from that.
Yeah, that's entirely fair. I'm going to say my dick of the day is Willem de Waal. No reason why.
Whoa. You leave Willem de Waal after this.
I would have said Duvanaka, but, you know, I actually quite like him.
You don't know who he is.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So the next game is the Southern Kings. I've just seen their right winger is called Wiley Human. Oh, my God. Their fullback's called Tiger Mangwenny.
What? I mean, so I was drawn to the fact their 13 is Fricky Welsh, which I've been called a few times. Fricky Welsh. The other wing is called Matt Turner, which lets the team down.
Yeah. So I checked this because I do not remember Matt Turner. Except, of course, no, England and Sevens legend.
It is the England Sevens Matt Turner. Yeah.
Who now plays for the Seattle Seawolves and MLR. And I had to check this. This is his only appearance for the Southern Kings.
What?
So he signed for them, played one game and then left.
Played one of the highest profile games they'll ever play.
And then just dipped.
And then disappeared.
Yeah.
He then went on the following season. No, that season leading into this, he played 3 games for Bristol, 2 of them off the bench, and lost all of them.
And then he went straight back to Bristol. So he must have just gone on a 1-game loan to the Southern Kings because he wants to play against the Lions.
That's
what
insane.
A glory supporter. Like, that's cool. Man just decided he wanted to play against the Lions and just said, Kings, do you fancy having me through a game?
I mean, sorry, what a complete... The centres are Fricky Welsh and DeWitt Barry.
Yeah.
DeWitt Barry.
He was still playing at this point. Like,
yeah.
We had a conversation about him before coming on air, and I didn't know he still played at this point. I thought he retired like 5 years before this, but no. Oh my God, Ross Skeet's playing in the second row for them with Marco Wenzel.
Oh, Ross Skeet? I remember Ross Skeet.
Yeah, from Toulon.
Of
Wasps. Again, a good Barbarians pick as well.
Yeah. Dean Sterling, man. You can tell we haven't looked at this.
Yeah. Italy second row, Dries van Schalkwyk on the bench.
Yes.
Wanky Sticks on the bench.
He has no profile on ESPN. He just says born data known. Major team Southern Kings.
I assumed Wanky Stick retired like 50 years ago. Rather than... Oh, wait, Francois Hohard played 9, but I don't care.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought that was interesting. Wait, sorry, I didn't say it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the score from this game was Kings 8, Lions 20. So, I didn't get a good look at the team, but...
So, Wanky Stick, right?
Which isn't even the funniest name in the team.
No. He really
him and
there,
Wiley Human on the wings.
He's only 36 now.
Oh, wow.
He's obviously been coaching for quite a long time. Yeah. Wow. So he spent most of his senior career, or he spent, no, I suppose, no, he played Only 14 games for the Kings, but played 4 games for the Mighty Elephants.
The Mighty Elephants?
The Mighty Elephants. Yes, it is. It's an off-brand equivalent. So their current squad, a lot of them have Wikipedia pages. They've got a second row called Giant Mtemba. Their current coach is Peter de Villiers.
Oh, of course it is. I forgot about that. Yeah, because they've got Peter de Villiers is coaching them. Andrew Scutzia is coaching Namibia, right?
Yeah.
And Heinicke Meyer is coaching Nola Gold, I think.
He's gone to MLR, yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically pressure's on Razzie to stay in his job.
Wangisic was 31 when he started coaching. Right.
Okay.
And has climbed very quickly.
On the contrary, the Lions team, they put Keith Earls to fullback with Ricky Flutie and Gordon Darcy in the centres. Mm. Mike Blair came in to start this game. Nathan Hines moved to the back row, so he played at 6. Mm. And basically they had a lot of the test team on the bench, but they tried not to bring them all on. So Shane got on, Ron Nagara got on, Matthew Rees and Adam Jones both got on, but they rested Tom Croft, David Wallace and Harry Ellis, who didn't make
this
the test
team. Where they really needed the Geography 6.
Yes.
We could have got WP Nell and Rickard Strauss.
Oh, man.
From the future.
Yes.
Get Matt Turner in. Maybe that's what he was hoping for. He wanted the Geography 6 call up.
Yes. And it's like, well, fuck you guys. I'm going to play for the opposition instead. And then Matt Turner has one involvement in this highlights package, which is there's a point where it's O'Gara who came on quite early for Hawke, who went off injured. O'Gara sticks up a fairly aimless cross kick, I think it's safe to say. Yes. And Ugamonya hasn't called for it himself. Ogara's just kind of gone for it. And so Ugamonya's kind of chasing, not half-heartedly, but like unexpectedly of where the ball's going to bounce. Mm. And it bounces really horridly for Monya, but brilliantly for Turner. And Turner just doesn't bother like dealing with it at all.
Because he's an inside man.
Because he's trying to impress Cyrene McGeachan and get in the test team for the Lions, right? And it kind of bounces backwards off Monya's hand, and then he kind of inadvertently grounds it with his shoulder, and a try is given off the back of it. And it's a really weird try, but thanks, Matt Turner.
It's a very old TMO laws thing, where they could only comment on so much, and they were, it all depended on what the referee had asked them. And it manages, the try is given despite being shit and not worth it.
There's definitely another one in one of the earlier games where it was a very similar situation, where it would have not been given in a million years if they could check like the old forward pass or something.
But the thing I found most notable about this try, is not the try itself, is that TMO process, right? So the referee for this game was the one and only Mr. Nigel Owens.
Mm, yes.
Okay, who they've flown out to referee this game because... And... How do I cover this? How do I say this? So when Nigel goes to the TMO, there's a very visible and very clear bulge in his pants, in his shorts.
Oh, no.
You can see a very clear bulge, and it's gone by the time the TMO cuts back to him to award the try.
Oh, no.
So, Nigel Owens had a semi whilst awarding the try. So that's my tick of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Matt Turner had this wrapped up, but... Nigel Owens' wanky stick, maybe.
Jesus, mate.
Sorry, that was distasteful.
I don't know if it was.
I'm genuinely speechless. Sorry, podcast. This isn't great because, for the listener. I am genuinely speechless.
I sort of looked at it thinking, is Nigel wearing really tight shorts? And then realised, oh no, you can see an outline. You can see, as I said, it's pretty clear.
Well, this is the stuff you listen to this podcast for. Because I'll tell you what, I can conclusively say nobody would have uncovered that and made that public knowledge if not for us going back over these games.
12 years ago, a farmer had a half erection.
He's gone 12 years without anyone spotting this. He thinks he's gone away with it. And then suddenly, this fella coming over here and... oh my God,
maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just it fell awkwardly, and those things happen, he was jogging over and it got caught, I don't know. But...
Have you ever had a semi on a rugby pitch?
Randrandra. I played in the semi-final once.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I made an intercept. We were like 3 points behind. I made an intercept for my own 22 in the last minute.
You've definitely told the story on the podcast before.
Have I? Yeah. I slowed down to look for support, got caught. You know, it was not
then
great.
Then died. Yeah,
tried to offload the ball, tried to throw it. It didn't. The opposition regathered it.
And then you died.
It didn't happen. Yes, I... Yeah, that was the last game I played as a teenager.
Anyway, you know what?
I want to be sensed.
You were actually spoiled for choice on Dickens of the Days on this one because I said Matt Turner had it wrapped up, but actually there's something that that doesn't sit well with me that happens later in this game. There's a penalty try.
Yes.
And the crowd rightly start booing as soon as that's given.
So Adam Jones absolutely annihilates them at the scrum. The Lions get a penalty try. Penalty try is given. Yeah. And then it's kind of funny what the camera cuts to next on the highlights package, because it cuts to a scrum five down the other end where the Lions drive them off the ball, but it causes the ball to come loose to such an extent that the flanker regathers it and scores.
Yeah. That's
like, if the Lions had just scrummaged, like, contained their scrum rather than destroying them, they wouldn't have conceded.
It's quite an underwhelming try at that point, isn't it? Because it feels like the Lions have just like wrapped it up. And then suddenly it's just like, oh, no, we'll concede this try where we defend quite poorly. The flanker does finish it well, but it's a really underwhelming try in that sense.
But so Miles Harrison, you know, and I've spoken on this podcast before about how much I love Miles Harrison. I think he's, you know, the best commentator. He, in that way he does, right? Miles Harrison, there's something great about him coming back for that third Lions test because, you know,
he was there. He always so much better. I was dreading that test before he was drafted in his commentator.
He always, every game he commentates on becomes an occasion, right? Yeah. And some of that is just how he talks about it in his passion and his love for the game is always clear. But part of it, I think, is he does editorialize a little bit and he does build things up, you know? Which often, usually, is great and makes things into a bigger occasion. When you're watching the highlights back 12 years later, however, some of them stand out a bit. So when the Kings score a try with 2 minutes to go to make it 20-8, and he says, "Are we going to see remarkable late comeback here for the Kings?" You think, no, Miles. No, we are not.
Oh, God bless him. I was thinking, like, that when going back over these games, like, having Miles Harrison on it was, like, maybe the best part of it. Because I can enjoy any Lions occasion that has Miles Harrison on the commentary. And, like, I, you know, we've discussed this a lot off air, but I had a period during this Lions test series in 2021 where I was just completely fed up of rugby and everything, mainly because of social media. And the news of the day before the test, thinking, oh my God, Miles Harrison's commentating tomorrow, genuinely is what got me up for the test and what made me like realise, no, I am actually looking forward to this. And I loved watching that third test and it felt like such an occasion. It was great.
Prior to the second test, they'd announced he was coming back for the third test. I had a little bit in the back of my head thinking, well, I wanted to side with Miles Harrison commentating. Yeah, I don't want him to be commentating on the dead rubber. So I kind of, there's a bit of me that wanted South Africa to win it in order to get that decider and have his voice there.
It makes such a difference having him commentate on Lions games. But
he's just the best.
But yeah, anyway, great result for the Lions to win 20 points to 8 against a team that had a Tiger at fullback. I think that that's something that can't be understated.
Lions versus Tigers. Rugby.
Yeah.
They play the cheaters. They're
the
now
tiger
playing
and a human and a wanky stick in the back three.
Yes. So that brings us through the warm-up games. They do go on to play South Africa A between the first and second tests.
Yeah, we've not looked at that.
We have not, because right now the next game the Lions play is against
South Africa.
Thank you. I was trying to be dramatic.
Sorry. I wasn't sure if you'd forgotten.
Hold on. No, it's against...
South Africa!
No, sorry. Okay. No, we'll do it a third time.
Third time. We're going to nail it. I'm going to not say it this time. Okay.
Are you sure?
It's
against...
South Africa.
Okay.
Go on, say it. I didn't say anything.
South Sudan. it's against South Sudan. So will they win? Will they lose? Will they draw? Those are the only three options available. So
one of the above.
One of those three. And do you want to nominate an overall man of the pre-stage?
Not really. I think we've done enough of these, to be honest.
Brilliant. Okay.
I think my man of the match for the Kings game is...
I want Adam Jones and Nigel Owens.
Yeah, okay. I'll say my man of the match is Ugo Monya.
Okay.
And my dick of the day, God. So it's penalty try. It's got to be penalty try.
Okay.
Oh, I hate that guy. But not as much as I hate Feathers McGraw.
So, as we head into the test series, that puts Lee Byrne and Dan Wordumas level as man of the tour so far.
Oh, man. I can't wait to...
With dick of the tour torn between Shane Williams, Pat Sillyers and Keith Earls.
Okay.
We'll see how those pick up as we head into the tests themselves, which are, of course, against South Africa.
South Africa, yeah.
I did it.
So, just firstly, before we wrap up, it's good to be back, and sorry for a massive like wait. It's been like nearly 2 months since we last recorded because of the Lions tour's been really busy, and we had the whole conundrum of everything disappearing from YouTube and just not knowing how to handle that. Amongst everything else, it was kind of one more thing on our plate that we didn't want to deal with. Yeah, and obviously, the day before we recorded this, I put up the tweet kind of teasing that we were going to do this again, and I just want to say like some of the replies, like Jared Wright saying, "Been patiently waiting for this." A load of other people saying, "Yes, please, please come back." Harley Worthy saying, "Why do you think I'm listening to everything again?" There's just been some really, and of course, Sam Lana asking if we're Kermode and Mayo, which is quite nice.
We are Kermode and Mayo, aren't we?
I mean, I know a lot about Wallace and Gromit, so.
Should we? Wait a minute, we haven't even the box office top 10. Wait, what are we doing?
It's good to be back. But yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for everybody who responded to that, you know, has been listening while we've had our sort of downtime. And just apologies, but I'm glad that we are now back.
Yes, thank you. It's lovely to be back, and we will see you next week when we'll be back again to do the first test. Thank you very much, everyone.
Yes.
Bye!
We'll see you there. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.